You are Locked On Jaguars, your daily Jacksonville Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to this somber edition of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, your sad, tearful, upset host, Zach Goodall. You can make sure to follow me on Twitter for sad, tearful, and upset tweets at Zach_Goodall, as well as my co-host Chris Thornton at Misto Christopho. He was live from the game. Chris, do I hear you taking a sip of something right now?
The Jags have driven me to drink.
The Jags have driven Chris to alcoholism. Today was without a doubt the most exciting game the Jaguars have had in,
I'll just say it now. That would have been fantastic Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, it probably would have been fantastic Sunday Night Football. They played their best game.
Ratings-wise, it probably would have been really good.
Oh, yeah, because it was a good game just in general from start to finish. The Jaguars came out playing decently. They moved the ball well. They were able to run the ball really, really well today as a whole until the end, which we're going to get to later. Not as much on the hands of Leonard Fournette and company as it was other factors that made the running game halt. But they played well. The defense played really well, had a couple of sacks, a lot of pressure, and three interceptions, two coming from Jalen Ramsey, a big segment coming up on him later. But at the end of the day, there is one big sore thumb that sticks out, and that is number 5, the quarterback. Just not a good day from him at all in several occasions. Just bad throws, terrible judgment, a lack of trust from the team to actually get him to move the ball. And that took what was a 10-point lead with, 11 minutes left in the game into a 3-point or four, was it 3 or 4-point loss at the end on a last-second walk-off touchdown by Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, Chris, let's go ahead and dive right into it. I mean, obviously, there's always more than one factor that goes into a loss, but it should be the consensus. The number one factor that lost Jacksonville this game today was Blake Bortles, right?
Yeah, I mean, when your starting quarterback can barely eclipse 100 yards passing, despite the opposing quarterback throwing three interceptions, your defense, basically the Jags' defense looked like them old selves today. They were forcing turnovers. The entire crowd was counting every time Ben threw an interception. Fournette almost hit 100 today. He looked pretty good until the end when just the blocking and play calling was just awful. But that first half, Fournette was putting on a clinic. But Bortles, just that windup when he had a fumble towards the end of the first half, I believe, he just didn't look good. I mean, how many times did the Jags run it today? I know at one point they were at like 47 rushing attempts. Or, sorry, not 47. They were at like 37. They finished with 43 rushing attempts today.
They finished with 43 for 179 rushing yards.
So,
ran with ease. They were nearly 5 yards per carry.
If you were to break it down by half, like Fournette was probably averaging over 4 yards a carry before the second half started. But 3.4, I mean, it's kind of better than what he usually averages. But Fournette looked good today. I've probably been one of his biggest haters. But the passing game was obsolete, non-existent today, and that just really falls solely on the shoulders of Blake Bortles. It's no longer really – it used to be kind of a combined, really kind of 50-50 split between Nathaniel Hackett and Blake Bortles. But I think this week it's basically like 80-20 Blake Bortles to Nathaniel Hackett. Nathaniel Hackett, I think, at this point is just handicapped with what he has at Blake Bortles, because we saw in week 2 against the Patriots that he called a beautiful game. He has that ability to call it, and I think that's when he had confident Blake. But with the way Blake is playing now, he basically can only call, like, granted the O-line isn't very good in pass protection. It seems like Blake is under duress under 2 or 3 seconds, but if Nathaniel Hackett is basically just chained to a dead horse at this point at quarterback. So I don't know how much of the blame could still be put on him.
He's
granted
cracked.
That he could have called better run plays, because there was one point towards the end of the fourth quarter that if Blake would have kept a handoff, it looked almost like a read option. But if Blake would have kept the handoff, he might have scored like a 70-yard rushing touchdown because the entire defense was biting on Fournette. And that comes down to Nathaniel Hackett. Maybe it was just a design run play, but if you call a read option,
right,
I'm sure Blake sees that that entire side of the field is basically vacant, and you get a first down with like 3 or 4 minutes left, and you can just start chewing clock, and you might win the game that way. So some of the responsibility for this loss definitely falls on Nathaniel Hackett for calling a very, very vanilla second half offensive play call, but ultimately it falls on Five's shoulder for not being able to complete even the simplest of throws or plays.
Right, and we'll talk a lot more about Hackett later, because while I think you have it down to a T that it's about 80% Blake, 20% Hackett, so definitely a little bit to put on him. We're going to dedicate our second segment to talking about Hackett a little more. But I'd like to talk about some examples of Bortles' play and exactly what he did wrong, because it's easy to just say he was bad. But there are some legitimate examples. I think that one run play that you're talking about, the option, like, yeah, you look back and he's got four... Dude's fast enough to where if he catches the defense that off guard, because he didn't run any options during the day. I think he scrambled once and gained 7 yards, but otherwise didn't run the ball. He might have outrun the entire
attempts.
Oh, my bad.
2 for 17.
Well, at the end of the game, he could have he would have caught them off guard. He would have gone 40 some yards, most likely. But it makes me think that it was most likely a design run and not a read option, because you would have seen his eyes move back that way a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But looking at outside factors, the Jaguars rushed for 179 yards. The receivers did not have any drops. The defense forced 3 interceptions and had 2 sacks. They held the Steelers to 26 rushing yards. And James Conner has been one of the most efficient running backs in the NFL. 26 rushing yards.
They held him to...
They held Connor to 25 on 9.
They held them to 51 total yards.
Yeah, exactly. Like, as a receiver and a running back, 51 total, and he's one of the best all scrimmage yards guys across the league right now. So obviously, all these outside factors, the Jaguars played a damn good football game, and the quarterback handicapped them. They just don't trust him to throw the ball. When they do, things go wrong. There were a couple of examples. There was the 3-play drive at the end of the first half. Jaguars have about a minute left on the clock. They're just outside of field goal range, and I'm talking just like 5 to 10 yards outside of field goal range. Steelers have no timeouts. You're a coach here. You're running the ball at least once to, you know,
either chew clock or do something.
Yeah, exactly. You can try and take a shot, and I'm all for taking at least like one shot, but they took 2 shots. One of them was nearly intercepted. It was a dropped interception that fell onto the ground as the defender tried to breadbasket it. The other one was really badly overthrown to the outside. And then on third down, you got 50 seconds left. Bortles is rolling, and they decided to call a pass play here instead of trying to chew the clock. Maybe Fournette can grind out just 5 or so yards to get you into field goal range. And instead, what he does, Bortles rolls out to his right, has a ton of room to just run and slide, or even if you need to, take a sack. The Steelers have no timeouts left, and they're the type of offense. Anyways. Yeah, exactly. He took 6 today, and there were several that he did not need to take. But you can try and chew that clock off, and instead, what does he do? He throws a terribly placed ball that ends up just soaring out of bounds. 50 seconds left, and they have to punt. They're lucky the Steelers weren't able to drive the field and score, because this is the type of team that normally can. And the Jaguars' defense is typically the defense that will allow a team to do that. Today was the outlier, as the defense played a really good game. So if the Steelers score there, I'm probably a lot more livid about it than I am now, because at the end of the day, they didn't. But that was a perfect like display of Bortles has no mental awareness of what's going on, and the play calling was not great in that situation. I'm still willing to put that drive on Bortles itself. And then later on, there was 2nd and 7. It was at about 11 minutes left in the fourth quarter. DJ Chark's the primary read to the right side. He's breaking on a deep slant, wide open, has at least 4 yards of separation from his corner, and there isn't a safety or linebacker in sight. Blake stares him down, clean pocket, no pressure, no defenders coming at him just yet. He looks like he's about to wind up and throw the ball. He's got it back. He decides to hold on to it, even though Chark breaks, is wide open, has a ton of room for yards after the catch, takes a sack instead, holds on to it for an additional 3 seconds, drops 10 yards. Logan Cook ends up having to come out and punt the ball when Blake could have chewed more time off the clock. He could have put them in at least field goal range. With that momentum, they probably could have gone down and even scored again. Totally different outcome if Blake just throws that damn ball right there. Easiest throw in the world to make. You're staring at DJ Chark wide open, and you just decide it's best for you to take the sack. In return, the Steelers come back and score. Jags never get any offensive momentum back. The Steelers take away all the time in the game, go down and score, game over. There was just, it was continuous stuff like that. Multiple times where Blake had no mental awareness, bunch of really poor throws and poor decisions. This team has to literally play perfect, and even when they do, Blake can't still at least even play decent at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he's at a total loss, and it's just, looking at the stats, the Jags had the ball for 37 minutes compared to 22 minutes on the day. Each team had 14 drives total, but the Jags ended up punting on 9 of those drives. And then Blake didn't have, I don't think there was any turnovers today, but
no,
there was an almost turnover when Blake fumbled it on his Egyptian goddess looking wind up. Blake was bad today. I mean, he was sacked 6 times, which obviously is in part to the offensive line, but he took them in the worst possible scenarios. And then, like you said, towards the end of the half, when he had that one play to DJ Chark just standing on the sideline, who was open for like 3 or 4 seconds, which likely would have been a first down, he takes so long to make that read, and then he just airmails it by like 5 yards over DJ Chark's head, which just is basically a timeout for the Steelers. So he had a 28.3 quarterback rating, which honestly might be a little too high. But it's just bad, man. It's just, Bortles is just, he's the anchor to this ship right now. The boat right now is just anchored.
Hey, that was nice. That was really good. It's anchored. Props to you.
And it's just, it's not going anywhere with Blake. And I mean, the defense, I don't know if we have a segment really to talk about this. The defense played really damn good today. They had 3 interceptions, which is unlike them really for the entire season. And just Jalen Ramsey was putting on a clinic to start this game. Yeah. After the rumors, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but
I think he used that as motivation. We'll definitely dive into that, but we'll dive into that
a little bit later, but just Blake isn't it. And if this team, I tweeted out, I said the defense might actually boycott if they send out or name Blake the starter next week. It wouldn't surprise me, and honestly, I wouldn't blame them, because you're not getting any better with 5. 6, granted the offensive line isn't playing great, but 6 can at least like have the ball out within 3 seconds, whereas Blake, by the time his drop back and wind up is down, he's already at like 4 seconds. So I think at this point your season's lost. You had a win out basically at this point. Now you're going to be 9-7 at best, and you still have the Colts and the Texans, which the Colts are on fire right now. The Texans lost today to the Redskins, but your playoff percentage or making the playoffs is probably like under 3% at this point. So the season's a loss at this point. You can just do it to your fan base. If Cody Kessler goes in and sucks, then at least we can say as fans, well, he wouldn't have been the answer either. So I think you at least owe it to the fans to put Cody in and just say, this is it. And if Cody balls out, then the fans will probably definitely be even more angry. But if he loses out, or if he's just about equal as Blake, then you could just literally just pencil it as, okay, the season is just a verified loss, injuries and everything. So I think Doug Marrone and the coaching staff owe it to the fan base, really, and to their team, to the defense, and Josh Lambeau, that Cody Kessler should get a shot at this and just say you literally gave it every attempt or shot that you had.
Now, I asked a question on Twitter. I asked 4 questions on Twitter for today's episode. I had 19 replies. About 17 or 18 of them were all, in a way, all categorized under the number 5. A lot of them were pretty much, what can we do? What can we do? One of them was, what does Cody Kessler, like, how much worse could it be with Kessler, or do you think he'd provide some form of improvement? And I think you pretty much answered it there in what you were just saying about how he releases the ball better and stuff like that. So that knocks out one of the questions I was going to ask you. I'll ask one more before we decide to move on. Someone just asked, what can they do? They're in a situation where Bortles is under contract next year. They can cut him and take a dead cap, but at the same time, still have a little bit in savings. It's not very much, but even though they take a hit, they'd have a little bit in savings.
Save $4 million.
What can and should they do to fix the quarterback situation? Is it something that you just say, you know what, we're cutting ties now and going with Kessler and some backup option that we find on the street? Is it something you ride out the season and hope that you draft high? Is it you make a trade for a guy in the off season, like some guy that might be, you know, coming to an end of his time with a certain team, like maybe Matthew Stafford, Ryan Tannehill? Is there anyone you pay? Like, what do you truly think are the options, and what is the way you would go about it?
Well, going back to my GM article, there's a few options that the Jags have. Honestly, at this point, when this season is over, you have to draft a quarterback in the first two rounds. I know this quarterback class isn't strong, but we've seen in the past that you don't necessarily have to draft a quarterback high to get a good quarterback. So you take somebody, whether it's in the first or high in the second round, because you're going to be drafting that high, you have to take a quarterback. You have to take somebody of value, because if you don't, the franchise will burn to the ground. Or you sign somebody in free agency, which there really aren't a whole lot of options. Really, you're left between Teddy Bridgewater and Tyrod Taylor. Can they bridge you for a year? Maybe, but you're going to probably have to get another offensive coordinator that can build an offense around that. Secondly, you go into next year with basically a three-quarterback battle to win the starting job, but secretly Blake Bortles is automatically exempt. He just doesn't know yet. Because looking at the cap books, if you cut Blake Bortles before June 1st, you only save $4 million. If you cut him after or designate him after June 1st, you save $9.5 million. So granted, by the time you're cutting Blake Bortles after June 1st, free agency and stuff is well done, but you're kind of helping yourself with cap maybe in the season for a trade or beyond. So obviously, if they're going to want to cut Blake right out of the gate, then that's fine. You save the $4 million. At this point, you're taking a loss anyway with the dead cap. But if you need to make that move, you make it post-June 1st. But I think Blake shouldn't be on this roster by the time training camp rolls around. That's how I think it should be. Honestly, for the guy, I think it'd be kind of a dick move to hold him onto your roster until like free agent or until training camp and then cut him, because that makes his odds of signing elsewhere significantly smaller. I think you just cut him out. Yes, you bite your tongue, you swallow your pride and say, yep, we screwed up on this one. We're going to swallow the dead cap, but Blake, you're free to go. Franchise, he's gone. So I think that's what the team should do, and maybe if a new GM somehow comes in, if Shad Khan just says, okay, I'm done with you, Dave Caldwell, you've given your best go, but you can't do it, or Tom Coughlin, whoever has that power, you bring in a new GM, and you just let him start fresh. So, honestly, I don't think Blake Bortles is going to be on this team by next year. I think at the beginning of this year, we'd obviously all be shocked because he just got that extension, but I don't think Blake Bortles is playing, obviously, where the front office thought he'd be playing. So I think Blake Bortles needs to be definitively gone after this year.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And it really does depend on what becomes available to the Jaguars. We're going to have to see where they finish off the rest of the year. Will they be in the situation that they can take a quarterback at the sweet spot? Because obviously it's okay to reach for a quarterback if you think he's the guy, but there's like a limit on how much you should reach for a certain guy. And I think that'll really start to shape out post-January through the playoffs, stuff like that. Despite us being in draft season now, when draft season really starts to kick up and you start to get an idea as to where guys are valued. I mean, I do think that there are guys worth taking. Justin Herbert, Dwayne Haskins are both really intriguing. I'm a big Daniel Jones fan, especially if this is the type of offense that Jacksonville decides to keep running. If you do look to maybe, you know, if this team is trying to sell out and start fresh, maybe you look around for an actual like veteran that is worth a damn at this point, and drafting a guy if you can, and have a bridge type of dude come in and work with a young quarterback. There's going to be options, but right now, unfortunately, there's 6 games left in the year. and we're stuck with Blake. I think that segment went a little long, so we'll wrap it up there and we'll shorten out our next two, but they're important. Stick around. We're going to be talking about Nathaniel Hackett and Jalen Ramsey coming up next. So Nathaniel Hackett, like Chris said, is about 20% to blame for today. Definitely not as much on the quarterback because he's kind of handicapped by the position itself, but there were still times where he missed up on some play calls. And I think I labeled the one with the 3-play drive, at the end of the first half where they threw it 3 times. I think that was a pretty good example of just, you know, you have to try and take that time off the clock there. You can get yourself into scoring position if you run the ball. It was not very far to try and kick a field goal or at least get that time down. And at the end of the day, the Steelers didn't score there and they're very lucky. The Jags were very lucky at the time that they didn't score there, but the Steelers are the type of team that takes advantage of that and normally would score. So if they did score, that'd be super, super reflective on how bad of a 3-play series that was for Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of just diving into the numbers a little bit in the first segment, that there was 37 minutes of possession, 14 total drives, and 9 of them ended in punts. Logan Cook was the most effective person in yardage today with 415 yards and punts. So Logan, just on a solo note, kind of looked much improved today with the way he was punting. Granted, he had a few punts that were a little shorter, but there was one towards the end of the game that DJ Chark, I think, got fooled by a Ryan Switzer fair catch like 10 yards before where the ball actually bounced, which eventually was a touchback, but that could have easily been pinned within the 5 or 10 yard line. So Cook had a very strong day, in my opinion, compared to weeks past, but that's just kind of a little side note. But and then Josh Lambeau, MVP, perfect on kicks again today, 10 points out of 16. So, but Nathaniel Hackett, like I was saying earlier, if he needs to, I know Blake Bortles is not a good passer of the football. That has been known since his like rookie year. But at this point, as an offensive coordinator, your job is to build an offense no matter how bad it might be around the strong suits of your of the game or of your offense. And he doesn't seem to be able to do that. I know you have a quarterback that can't throw the ball, but Blake is not that bad of a running quarterback. Spread the defense out a little bit. Call some read options. Like I said, towards the end of the fourth quarter, like when you were trying to ice this thing out, if you call a read option on that third down play when it's like 3rd and 13 or whatever, maybe it was like 3rd and 7, if Blake keeps that ball, he might have like a 70-yard rushing touchdown because the entire defense committed to stuffing Leonard Fournette in the middle of the line on just a run up the middle, and that's what Hackett called. He just calls it run up the middle. If Blake keeps that, he at least gets 20 or 30 yards, maybe even in a field goal range at the least, and that's another first down. So you probably make Pittsburgh burn at least one timeout, and then you're able to run 2 or 3 run plays, and this game's down to 30, 20 seconds with punt or a field goal. So you might win the game if you call better play calling there, but it's just so, I was telling the guys around me in the stands that literally with Leonard Fournette, they just run kind of these inside out zone guys. Why not run some pitch plays with Leonard Fournette to get him to the edge? Because when Fournette was getting outside, he was like very close to breaking a few big runs. Instead, they kept running into these 8, 9, 10, 11 man boxes and just getting no gains, especially towards the end of the game. Run some pitch plays, maybe to Hyde or Fournette or Yeldon. You have a pretty talented running back group. Change it up. But that just seems to be the problem with Hackett is he doesn't. He just goes with the same HB dive plays or just kind of just running a little bit outside zones with Fournette. Run some pitch plays, run some options, run some D.D. Westbrook wide receiver crosses. I don't know, like just, or a jet sweep, I should say, just change it up, read option, triple option. I don't care. You have to get creative when you're bad. So that's my problem with Hackett is this entire season, he hasn't been able to adjust to a play caller like good offensive coordinators. Now, like look at Kyle Shanahan. Although he's not the offensive coordinator, you can bet your ass he has like significant saying in the offensive play calling. And when Jimmy Garoppolo goes down with injury. Nick Mullins, a guy who's never even, like, I think, thrown a career pass, or maybe it's like 10 career passes at the max, comes in and he wins a football game with him because he is able to adapt that week to his quarterback going down, simplifying and making an easy playbook for his quarterback, and Nick Mullins delivers. Now, granted, Nick Mullins might be a better quarterback than Blake Bortles at this point, but he was able to adjust and move on, and that's something that Nathaniel Hackett hasn't been able to show really at all with his sputtering offense, that he can adjust and call a competent play call with what he has.
Now, in a somewhat enlightening thing about offensive coordinators, I'm all for letting Hackett go and bringing in someone that can utilize quadruple option. Four ball carriers today.
Give me Fournette. Lincoln Riley.
Hey, I'll take Lincoln Riley as the head coach. Yep. And I like Doug Marone, but I'll take Lincoln Riley as the head coach.
Let's just blow this thing up and just go new. Do what the Rams did with Sean McVay. Get a young gun and just bring him in and let's party.
I'm just so curious to see exactly how they'll handle, like, the responsibilities of the coaching jobs once this season is over, or if anyone will lose a job mid-season, considering they're right now on a 6-game losing streak. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely still here to say that this was a Blake Bortles loss. He was the direct and somewhat indirect reason as to why they lost this game. But I mean, at the end of the day, there was definitely, if you were to find, like, his, you know, second in command to losing this game, it was Nathaniel Hackett at this point.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. I just went on like a 4-minute rant on what Nathaniel Hackett could do better. And honestly, I think you could probably pull any person that has competent football IQ to probably call better play call with the offense that the Jags have.
Because exactly.
You have to get creative at this point. You can't go traditional. You can't go. You can't just go cookie cutter. You have to just go. You got to go outside the box. When you're bad, that gives you almost free reign and basically a free card to try whatever works. If it doesn't work, you'll still get grunts and moans, but at least you're trying something. When you're just running it up the middle 27 times, 28 times in a game, and at first it works, and then the defense catches on, it's like, oh, all we have to do is plug the middle. That's when people get frustrated because, like we said today, no, I don't think anybody had really high expectations for this Jaguars game, but...
And that's what makes it so disappointing.
Like, honestly, fans, it's sad that fans would have rather been blown out today than the way we lost, because we couldn't just finish out a game. We were up 16-0 at one point, and you blow a 16-point lead because you literally cannot get a first down. You literally can't go 10 yards without either getting a sack, a penalty, or just a plain out first down. And that is what's most so infuriating about this franchise and this offense, is that literally you have to ask for a miracle to get a first down in the National Football League. And honestly, there's probably like the Bills and the Raiders that can probably relate to that at this point.
For sure. Well, I think that should just about do it on our second segment. Splitting the blame into two segments between two people. And one was about 80% longer than the other one. So I think this literally all matches up perfectly and in sync, because we're your favorite podcast. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some news from before the game started, how that news led into today's game, and what to think about said news going forward. Yes, this has to do with Jalen Ramsey. So rumor came out this morning that the Jaguars were going to consider trading away Jalen Ramsey this offseason, from Adam Schefter of ESPN. And he worded it as if the Jaguars were coming out and saying they were going to consider that. His report read that he had heard from a GM or something like that across the league that they wouldn't be surprised if the Jaguars made him available and that teams would come calling and stuff like that. So obviously it came out as a little fishy, and the Jaguars within about 30 minutes came out and released a statement, very simple statement, saying that there's absolutely zero intention to do that. There's no way it's going to happen. Jalen Ramsey said post game that he heard about it, thought it was whatever. He wants to sign an extension with this team in the offseason, and that he wants to, as his interview over the summer said with Mina Kimes of ESPN, he wants to retire a Jaguar. And maybe that, maybe Adam Schefter should report every week that Jalen Ramsey is going, could possibly be traded, because that seems to motivate him. He had two picks, like three or four defended passes, a couple of big plays today where he shut down a underneath play by making a big tackle. He had probably the best game of the season and one of the better games of his career today, without a doubt.
Yeah, I mean, if just he obviously had a few plays where he got beat by Antonio Brown, but that's going to happen when you're playing the best wide receiver in football. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, was putting on a defensive clinic. I mean, that interception he had, the first interception on Ben was cookie cutter from last year, just the one where he dumps it off. And then, honestly, this game almost felt like, to begin, was almost a replay of last year, because Jalen had his pick. Barry Church got a pick later on, who, by the way, looked much improved today. I don't know what Wash did or told him to do, but Barry Church didn't seem to be as much of a liability on the defense today. But, no, he had some pass breakups. He was tackling strong. He just seemed like he was having – he led the team in tackles. He had three pass defenses and two interceptions today. So he was on another level of play, at least for this year, maybe his entire career, like you said. So Jalen Ramsey basically shut all the haters up with the trade talk, because he put on a clinic, and he was his first multi-interception game of his career, so literally put on a career performance today following the news of that interception. Was that motivation, or does he just have Big Ben's number? I'm sure this defense had this game written down because they know the success and how much this game meant for the season, but it was a damn good performance by Jalen Ramsey, and all hail the king.
Now, obviously, the team did come out and shut down any rumor of that. However, and I believe them when they say that, like, full disclosure, I believe them when they say that out. But in the past, we've seen teams say stuff and go and do the opposite. And these are old excuses. The only reason why I'm saying them is because I saw them on the timeline today and I thought of them. I'm sure there are plenty more of many recent one like examples of something like that where then the team did the opposite. But one comes back to Jacksonville themselves. Wayne Weaver said he wasn't going to sell the team, and he sold the team. The Vikings said they absolutely were not going to trade away Percy Harvin. 2 days later, they traded away Percy Harvin. I would like to say that there isn't a chance the Jaguars trade away Jalen Ramsey this offseason. Rather, they do sign him to the extension he wants and make him a Jaguar for life. Jeez. Do you see any way that they could possibly do that? Just like, say worst comes to absolute worst, and this offseason, like, they go into this offseason like literally 4-12 and decide to fire sale and collect picks or something. Or do you think, like, it's a foregone conclusion, he's signing that extension, he's never leaving Jacksonville unless it's to go and see his family up in Tennessee?
I don't know. I mean, the talk this morning got me into trade speculation, what I would trade and what I wouldn't trade. But I think his performance today put me back into my own element and threw me off the fence. I am completely team keep Jalen Ramsey at all costs, unless somehow a team were to offer you a ridiculous bounty, like franchise future changing bounty. Like, if a team with like just so much draft capital was like, here is three or four first round picks, I don't know how a GM you can turn that down. Because yes, Jalen Ramsey is a generational cornerback and might be, when he's playing his best, one of the best cornerbacks in the league, but four first round picks, especially if they were in like one, like three in one draft or two in one draft, that is an insane amount of talent to bring to a franchise, especially one like the Jaguars, where the holes seem to be getting more plentiful and bigger. The offensive line, the wide receiver group, defensive end, just quarterback, obviously. The holes are getting bigger, but there's really no team that could offer you that right now. The highest I could think of is Green Bay, who has two first-round picks in 2019. At this point, the price tag for Jalen Ramsey, for me personally, is almost too high for any team in the NFL, unless you were to either trade like two first-round picks and a really good player with that, or like an elite player with a first round pick attached to it. And I don't really see that asking price too much, or for a quarterback, which really the only one I could see is like Green Bay offering Aaron Rodgers for Jalen Ramsey. And honestly, in that trade, I might give up a pick if you're getting,
if it's Aaron Rodgers. But that's the thing, is that I don't think you're ever going to,
that's not going to happen unless. So
now what about ones that would happen? So, and like I said, and I want to keep clarifying, we don't think this is going to happen, but this is merely entertaining talk, since obviously it gets a little tiring to just keep talking about Blake Bortles. What if it was a quarterback like Matthew Stafford, for instance, and his career hasn't lived up to its hype because he's been very good. He's always had some form of issue around him, either poor blocking up front, really bad receivers, or when things finally go his way, he suffers an injury or doesn't have as good of a year. But there are glimpses of excellence at a lot of different points, much more excellence than we've ever seen. So what if there was a potential package with Detroit to where you could get Stafford for Ramsey and you also get another something in return? Maybe I don't think they'd give up a first and Stafford, but like a second or a second and a fourth or something like that. Is he the type of quarterback you'd look at in that kind of tier, or would that still be too low for sending away someone you could argue into being the best corner in the NFL?
That, I think, looking at Stafford, yes, every year it seems like, oh, Stafford didn't have this, Stafford didn't have that. Stafford literally has a team this year that might be his best of his career. Granted, he doesn't have like a Calvin Johnson on his team anymore, but his wide receiver group wasn't that bad to start. He has guys like Kenny Galladay. He had Golden Tate. The wide receiver group isn't horrible. He finally has a running game again. He has Kerryon Johnson, who's been really good the last few weeks since he's really been put into that star line, that role. The offensive line, from my knowledge, granted I'm not a Lions expert, has been pretty damn good, or at least should be pretty damn good. Defensively, might have a problem. I would have to dive into it, but he had the team that he has. Offensively,
it's decent, and most quarterbacks
would like to have that. Like, it's better than what Blake might have now, at least offensive line wise. But I think Jalen Ramsey for Stafford, either straight up or even if they threw in like a second or third, I think you would still be losing that trade if you're the Jaguars. You need to, plus Stafford's 30. Granted, good quarterbacks can play until they're 40. We've seen with Tom, but although Aaron Rodgers is like 3 years older, Aaron Rodgers is. People bring up his stats. We're playing teams on the road, but that's because he's chained to a not very good team. Now, finally, the defense is getting there for the Packers, but he's still chained to like an idiot head coach in McCarthy. But I won't dive into that. There are very few quarterbacks that I would trade Jalen Ramsey for straight up. You would have to throw a first and your quarterback. And even then, I don't know who I would take quarterback-wise at that value. I think at this point you're just taking either multiple firsts or lots of picks, or a first and a good consolation player. One I was looking at just hypothetically was the Packers again. Although they drafted both of these guys in the draft last year, if you're offering Ramsey to the Packers, do you give up Josh Jackson and also a first maybe, or a second? Because Josh Jackson was a pretty highly coveted corner in last year's draft, fell to the second round to the Packers. If you take him on your team, yes, you're losing an all-pro corner in Jalen Ramsey, but the drop-off isn't huge. It's not like you're getting an unnamed rookie, plus you're getting a first-round pick as well. So whether you do, but I don't know. This whole situation is something that just might be just a moot point to talk about, because the value would have, although us as fans value players way more than franchises actually do, but I don't know. For me, I feel like if you get anything less than like either premier players or two first round picks, you're losing that trade if you're trading away Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, I feel you. I mean, I've always liked Stafford. I know that there you could really go either way on him. So as long as there's decent value, I think that you could pull off a fair trade that involves Ramsey and Stafford, but you'd want more coming back Jacksonville's way, and definitely wouldn't want Jacksonville giving up anything else. But we don't need to get too hypothetical. It's not going to happen. This is just to fill a little bit of airtime. Speaking of airtime, ours is wrapping up. So wanted to thank everyone for listening to today's recap episode of Locked On Jaguars. Make sure to find us iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Megaphone. Anywhere you can listen to podcasts, you can listen to us. Follow us on Twitter at Zach_Goodall, at Misto Christopho, and at Locked On Jaguars. Check out the website, bookmark us, LockedOnJaguars.com, and we will catch up with you guys later this week.